her daughter and her daughter's husband are the parents of a very close friend of my roommate, Kevin Clinton's, who went to Johns Hopkins University with him. But he is Greek, you see. And so when he came back in September to visit his family, he introduced us to his parents. And now he's come back to the United States. And ever since he's left, well, the parents have been having us over about once a week. And of course they don't know any English at all. And it's quite an experience. They are amazing people. And they have a grandmother there who is 96. She's from Amorgos, and she talks about how when she was a girl, she came from what they call a megalosoi, which means a great house, you know what I mean? An island dynasty. They didn't have any political power, but they were traders, I guess, and quite wealthy. And, of course, they're all gone now, and all her children, except for her daughter, are dead, I believe. But her son-in-law thinks that, well, it's amazing how they treat old people over there. They're not nearly as respectful as we are, or as deferential.
Really?
Not at all. No, they're continually subjected to all kinds of sarcasm and joking. Mm-hmm. So her son-in-law is always joking about how she shouldn't have wine, but she does, and how she wants to get married, but she wants her husband to be at least 120 years old. He's always asking us if we're going to come to the wedding. It's going to be next week when she remarries. And she herself jokes about this. And the interesting thing is that they don't... Well, they're very kind to the old lady in the sense that they keep her in their house and they take care of her. They would never think of putting her away anywhere the way we do. But they don't give her the preferred seat in the house. And as a matter of fact, they give her the least preferred seat in the house. And she pretty well has to fend for herself. And in other words, they serve us first and make a great to-do over us. And then the grandmother is next after us. And sometimes the grandmother doesn't even come to the table, although I suppose that may be because she's infirm that day. She enjoys vigorous good health at the age of 96, but she's so old she can't get around very well. She uses crutches and moves very slowly. But I suspect she may live to be 100, as Mr. Ephendra says every day. We go there 4 more years and she'll be 100. She may make it. Couple. When their son was there, he and they and the two of us drove to his father's village in northern Euboea, which is really in the wilds of Euboea. The road leading to this place, you just wouldn't believe how bad it was. And it was an area of Greece that Mr. Vanderpool, a professor at the school for 30 years, had not been in, which is rather remarkable in itself. And we spent the night in this village. It was just amazing experience to go back to the village life.
You mean he, the professor there, just knows all about it, please?
He's been to almost all parts of the mainland. He's a very fine classicist and an even better... Mr. Vanderpool is a little bit... he's not your run-of-the-mill classicist. For one thing, he never bothered to go and get a PhD. So he just has a BA. And he's rather shy, and he doesn't stick up for himself too much. In fact, they say he never gave any lectures until after the Second World War. He did not leave Athens in the Second World War, but continued going down to the American School Excavation at the Agora each day, working on his stuff. And one day the Germans just came and sent him away to, I think, near Vienna. He was in a camp. And when he was in this camp, they made him teach. And they say that that's the first time he ever realized he could lecture to an audience. And ever since the war, he's been giving them the book, the lectures to the students at the school. It's nothing the matter with the machine. He has, in his own time, on his own time, I should say, walked through many parts of Greece that few foreigners have been in. And of course, he's seen roads built into areas which... He used to have to go on foot. Now he can take the students in a bus. But he had not been to this particular part of Euboea. which is, by the way, a beautiful pine forest. You cannot imagine how beautiful it is. The trees are, oh, some of them upwards of 100 feet tall. And just beautiful sea down below, and mountainous, you know, very hilly with ravines leading down, just covered with these enormous pine trees.
In the mountains?
On the slopes of the mountains.
Well, that's unusual for Greece.
I suspect that in ancient times it was all very much like that. And when you read of the pine-covered Mount Kithairon and things like that, which are now, of course, just a big piece of rock, at least on the Boeotian side, it is true there are pines on the little Agostino side, but that's an area where you never go ordinarily. On the Attic side, that is. But on the Boeotian side, it's now pretty well bare rock. But I suspect that a lot of Greece was like that northern Euboea in ancient times, before it was deforested. Mm-hmm. The worst deforestation, I think, occurred under the Turks, because the people were desperate for money, and one of their sources of money was wood, evidently, and the Turks caused a lot of deforestation. There are actually a lot of places in Greece today which are not deforested, but they tend to be out of the way, and you don't tend to know about them.
Uh-huh.
But most of Euboea is like that.
Well, what would the professor make of it if he took students out all over those places? What would be the object of it? We don't have any interest anymore.
Well, speak for yourself. His object in taking them to almost every patch of ground in Greece has history behind it. If it's not Mycenaean or classical Greek, then maybe the Romans did something there. The Romans are everywhere. You know, all you have to do is dig under the dirt and you find Roman pottery. It doesn't matter where you are. You'll almost always find Roman pottery. By that, I don't mean real Romans necessarily, but the place was very heavily populated during Roman times. Then you've got Byzantine and Turkish period and even modern Greek period when history can be of interest. And so he'll take you to these places, and of course the school and Mr. Vanderpool both normally only take you to places that are of historical interest, but it's just that there are so many places in Greece of historical interest that despite my almost 2 years of traveling around, and I do take a good deal of time off to do traveling, there's still so many places I haven't been that I just could list them for hours and days of real historical interest.
Mm-hmm.
It is true, of course, there's only one Delphi and one National Museum and one Olympia and one Bassi, or maybe 10 temples in the whole country, but that doesn't mean that there aren't other places. He is not purely a bird watcher, although he is that too, or a lover of hiking, although he is that too, but his main interest is always he is a classicist foremost, and he's interested in the history of the country.
They are. You couldn't believe how many people.
Well, that surprises me.
Well, no, I've never been to France, but I suspect so.
Oh. Well, I remember I went to a horse show.
Now speak up and speak deliberately.
I went to a horse show in Loire. It was supposed to start at 2 o'clock. It started at 5:30.
Mm.
It never did really get going.
Did you ever see any of that horse show?
No. One or two horses came out and walked around.
I don't remember anything about it except about an hour late I left.
Went by train from Athens to Lavalia, and it's a 2-hour train ride, and it was an hour and a half late. It was supposed to get there at 7 and it got there at 8:30. I mean, that's a pretty short ride with that much delay, you must admit.
Well, they just don't care about making the schedule.
That's right. Their inefficiency is deep-seated. It goes every walk of life. They don't have the concept that we have of doing things on time efficiently.
I think that'd be marvelous.
Well, it's wonderful up to a point, but sometimes it can be very frustrating. If you're in a hurry and you have to get something done, then it is. I must say, when I go down there to get a package at the post office and I have to wait for 2 hours, it does annoy me. Because I can see the package right there. The crowning blow was that when I sent my camera to Germany to be repaired, I was so worried that it wouldn't come back before I left for the United States, because I wanted to bring it with me, of course. And I had sent it at the end of October, and I had received a letter about November the 6th from Munich saying that it was on the way back. Well, on December the 5th, I got my notice, which was, every time you get one of these things, it seems like you have to go to a different place. Well, this one was a part of the Piraeus that nobody had ever heard of. So I took the bus down there. That takes an hour or so. And stood up all the way. And then I took a cab to the address. I finally found a cab that knew where it was. And I went in the place, and they said, okay, fill out these papers. And I saw the camera right there. I recognized the name of the firm on the box and everything. And so he said, well, how much did you have to pay to have it fixed? And I said, well, I didn't have to pay anything to have it fixed. I had a guarantee. And he said, well, that doesn't matter. We can't take that into account. How much do you expose the expenses were? And I said, well, I haven't the slightest idea what they were. I received a letter, which I can show you here, that says it was a very kleines ding, and it was done right there in the factory, and it didn't imply that there was any expense at all. So I said, well, we better go up to the Fingdies, which is the director. So up we went, and he said, well, what you have to do is you have to assume a certain expense, put down $10. And I thought, oh my goodness, am I going to have to pay $10 duty, you know. By the time we got back downstairs, the employee I was dealing with, who was rather nice, had changed it to $3. So he said, now if you just sign these papers, everything will be perfectly all right, and on Monday morning you can pick up your package in Athens at the Sophocles Street Post Office. And I just hit the ceiling. I said, this is absolutely ridiculous. There's my package right there, and I want it. And I just, you know, I finally ended up by saying, and I have been wondering if this would ever do any good, I said, I'm going to telephone Mr. Patakos. He has sworn to eliminate bureaucracy. And that really scared him to death, because they are, you know, dropping heads right and left over there. The dictatorship people disappear from the streets, I think, and then they turn up later in military prisons. But it's definitely a militaristic regime in the worst sense, and there's no doubt about it. The trials are continually going on with the most trumped-up charges.
Well, look, Leslie, on your dinner, when you waited, the stuff got cold. Now, I can't understand that.
Well, that's because Mrs. Effendris is sort of slow-moving, and she has she's had her hip broken, and she has a metal pin in it. And what she does is she'll see, oh, I forgot the forks. And so she'll go into the kitchen, even though she knows, she must know, the forks are in that thing by the dining room table. I've seen her take them out of there 100 times. So then she comes sort of limping back in, she opens that thing up, and she takes out one fork and puts it beside my plate or something like that. And then she says, oh, I forgot the glasses for water. And of course they never serve water anyway, they just put the glasses there so you can thirst throughout the meal. So then she'll limp into the kitchen to get the glasses for water. Then she'll come in and realize that she's only gotten out one fork. So then she'll open the little case beside the dining room table, get out, oh, there aren't any forks. So she goes out to the kitchen to get another fork. I think they only have 2 full sets of silver. I mean, it's real silver. It's heavy to the touch when you pick it up. And they always want us to have that. And so sometimes switching around has to be done, and she has to go in the kitchen and get the more inexpensive stuff in the kitchen. And so it's just a constant process like this. And she brings out the 2 bowls, usually steaming bean soup, which is very good. This is one of their real specialties, which they make very well. It'll be sitting there steaming for about the first 10 minutes, and then it stops steaming. Mrs. Effendris is still going back and forth. And then just about, oh, when you think that everything has been gotten, Mr. Effendris will say, oh, I must go out and get some wine. I know you people want some fresh Retsina, which we do. But, you know, at this point, we could have done without it. So then he'll leave the house for wine. And then she disappears into the kitchen. And if the grandmother weren't there, we would, of course, start eating on the sly. And if they have olives or other little things that you take from a plate, we do usually nibble a little bit. Or the past few times, I've been taking little candies, you know, and I eat those. And that, the most...
Now let's...
Last time we went there, they started telling us about how they had been to dinner that morning at a friend of theirs, and how they had to wait so long while the food was in front of them that Mrs. Effendris had said she was going to come home and have lunch and then go back. Yeah.
I fumed enough that they finally decided they would let me have it. And after 2 hours of signing papers, and there was another of the FCDs who had to sign the paper, and he said he would sign it. And then we went out to get it ready, and we came back, he had disappeared. And he didn't want to sign that paper, you see, but he didn't want to have to tell me that he couldn't sign it. So he just disappeared. He thought I'd leave, but a half hour later, I was still there. So he came sauntering along, and he finally signed it. And then they sent me, the camera, and a runner over to the Piraeus Post Office, and they released it to me there at 1:30 at the Piraeus Post Office. But I had to get it through the post office. I couldn't take it from the place where it was.
That's just fabulous.
And the paperwork on my getting that camera was truly remarkable. There's sort of tradition, you have to have something called a chartosima, which is a little stamp, an official stamp, you know, that you stick on a piece of paper and then they stamp it with the royal stamp, and that makes it an official document. And you would never realize where you would go to get one of these things. You would think it would be a government office or something like that. And he says, well, go around the corner to the kiosk there and get a chartosima. So you go out of the building and you go down to the corner to the little cigarette stand and you say you want a chartosima. And what he gives you is one stamp, and then he gives you a piece of blank paper. And then you fill out the information on the blank paper. And if you don't know how to do it, if you're a foreigner, that is, the man at the kiosk will tell you what to put. And then you pay him about 5 drachmas. And the little stamps have, the corner is perforated so that the corner can be torn off so that they can't be used again, you see. So, it's truly amazing. But they filled out about 30 forms in triplicate for me to get that camera.
30 forms.
And there it was right there. I had my passport and it was addressed to me. All they had to do was give it to me. Things grown up through the years and they're afraid to delegate responsibility. This is their great fear. And so if you ask them, may I do this? And of course, whenever a foreigner asks for something, it always seems to be out of the ordinary for them. And because none of the Greeks ever dare to ask for anything. So they'll send you to someone
above it.
Or below it. They'll just send you to someone else because they don't want to say yes or no. They don't want to make you unhappy. That's the one thing they don't want to do. They want you to be happy in Greece, so they won't say no. But on the other hand, they're so afraid of their superiors and of something going wrong that they won't say yes either. So they send you to someone else. And the way with them is in the index of fear. They are terribly afraid of their superiors. But if they become more afraid of you than their superiors, then they will give you anything you want. I found this to be true. So all you have to do is just, you know, fume a little bit and pretend to be real angry, and they will just hand you whatever it is you want. And then you don't have to... If, on the other hand, you just remain polite and composed, you will never get anywhere, because they...
You like a little more milk.
Oh, no, thank you. I think it's fine. The postcard, which they send to you telling you that you've received a package, made a mistake, and he wrote to Mr. L. T. Reet, H-R-E-A-T-T-E. So I went in there, you know, it was not my error, it was their error. They had copied the address off the package wrong. So they wouldn't give me the package, because my name was Threet, and the name on the package was Reet. And, you know... I just said, this is ridiculous, and got furious, and they handed me the package. But if I had said, well, what shall I do? They would say, well, go to the ministry. And I, you know, I would have had to go to the ministry and wait for hours in some office before I could have gotten the whole thing straightened out. And all they would have had to do, of course, was to go look at the package, and they would have seen that the package and my passport jived. And it was just their postcard that didn't. It was different. For, say... $2,000, $3,000, you pay about $500 to $600 tax on it. And then you never pay again, probably. A minimal income tax, maybe. But your main tax is on the purchase. And if you buy any product in the store, if you buy a refrigerator or anything in the store, it costs exactly twice as much as it would in Italy or in the United States. Because the duty is 100% on everything. And that's why the Greeks, you see, they have a real struggle. Because not only is their standard of living much lower than ours, their wages and so on are much lower, but everything they have to buy is twice as expensive, plus the shipping. An electric mixer is something like $75, and it's some cheap Italian thing, you know, with plastic bowls, and not really very good. And here you can get a fine one for $20.
No, I didn't know.
But only the rich
the rich never really have to pay. They manage to get out of it. So their main source of income, you see, is cut off from income tax.
It'd be done to improve the country, that's for sure. So
you have books. It was, on the whole, unbiased towards the junta. It was neither for nor against. And this person, who was a correspondent in Germany who made several trips to Greece to do this article, said that the tourist trade had been unaffected for the most part. And I know that isn't true, because in May and June, it was just deserted. You didn't see a soul. You really didn't. You could go to Rhodes. We went to Rhodes and back. And you know, you wouldn't think Scandinavians would be as timorous as Americans, but very few Scandinavians were there. It was really down all over the country for most of the summer.
Mm-hmm.
It picked up in July and August, but nothing like what it would normally be.
For several years, Greece has been the tourist attraction.
Certainly has.
Mm-hmm. It is responsible for a lot of this trouble. The West, you said, I believe.
What?
What was it you said the other day?
Well, the whole thing started with the king in his... I wouldn't say he's completely responsible, but in a sense he's the immediate cause which touched off the series of events that led to this present situation. Papandreou was elected by a 67% majority, which in Greece is something that hasn't happened since the Persian Wars, when they united against the Persians. I mean, this is truly phenomenal that he got that percentage of the vote. I suspect he would have gotten even more last April if they'd had the election. He was elected and became prime minister. And, of course, the West didn't really like him too much because he did have leftist leanings. But in the short time that he was in, he did a number of remarkable things. For one thing, he instituted the Modiki in the public schools. That is, the language that the people speak and normally read and write. Most of the modern literature, for example, is written in the Modiki, not Kathareivassa, which is a bastard language... it's a polyglot language that's been manufactured over the past 100 years out of ancient Greek, you see. Uses extinct case forms and things like that. He instituted the instruction in all in the public schools in the Modiki, which was a great advance. It would be comparable for American students if they were taught to read and write, and particularly to write and speak an idiom, oh, say something like, even before Dryden, I won't go so far as to say Shakespeare, that it's not that different, I don't suppose, because after all, newspapers and so on are in Kathareivassa, so they are familiar with it. But it's very difficult, of course, to learn to write something like that well, which you don't speak and which is artificial. And I think that the junta has reversed that decision, and now they are trying to reinstitute Kathareivassa. How successful they will be able to be in this, I don't know. I rather doubt that they'll ever be able to really reinstate it in its old form. That was one of the things he did in education. Another thing he did was to abolish the tuition at the university. And this made a lot of people furious and made it free for all practical purposes. You had to pay 8 drachma for a ID card. This was a great step forward, because the university is notoriously bad. It's one of the worst in Europe. And the one in Thessaloniki is better than the one in Athens.
Oh.
It has long been in control of a few old families who passed the professorships from father to son.
Oh.
And particularly in the art side of it, the science is not quite so bad. It's a laughing stock. The students play cards during the lectures. The lectures are so completely ridiculous. The philology is on such a low level that you find these articles in which they try to prove that certain words in ancient Greek meant such and such because they're used in such and such a way in modern Greek, or worse still, they try to prove that a certain word should be used such and such a way in modern Greek because it meant such and such a thing in ancient Greek, which is completely ridiculous. So it's on a rather low plane. Had for a long time been the preserve of the wealthier because they could afford to pay the tuition. But fortunately, that has been kept by the junta, and they've even gone so far as to buy the students their books, which is the next big expense. Because in order to pass any of the examinations, what you have to do is read all the books by the professor. And these are usually quite expensive, and that's where the professor gets his main income, is from the sale of his books. It's
combinatorial system. In any event, Papandreou quarreled with the king over the control of the army, and I'm not too sure exactly what the reason was, but I think he felt that as long as the king had control of the army, he was really only nominally in control of the government and not really in control of it. And where he made his real blunder was he demanded to be his own defense minister. If he had agreed to fire the defense minister and then appoint another one, I think actually the king appoints the ministers, but I think he has to consult the prime minister. If he had done something like that, probably what happened wouldn't have happened. But what he did, relying on his great popular support, which was foolish but typically Greek, he refused to have another defense minister, demanded to be his own, and the king said, well, this is unconstitutional, which in fact it was. And then Papandreou says, well, if you won't let me do it, I will resign. And the king said, well, good, resign. And to Papandreou's surprise, he was suddenly out of office. And the king tried to form another government. Now, Papandreou thought that the king would never be able to form another government, that the parliamentarians would never agree. What in fact happened was a number of men quite close to Papandreou in his own party deserted to the king's side, and they were able to make a coalition which lasted until last Christmas. It broke up just at Christmas time. So that was, in a sense, a political victory for the king, even though everyone knew this coalition government was not only headless, but couldn't last very long. Papandreou, and this will give you some idea of the type of misjudgments he could make, decided that he would carry his cause to the people, so he started going through the country with these big speeches, and all the streets were lined with cheering crowds, and it just didn't do a bit of good. There were a lot of riots in Athens, but the police put them down. That all occurred the summer that I was there. Mm-hmm. And then this coalition government lasted for a year and 5 months until last Christmas, and it broke up. And the king asked the conservatives to form a government. I think the reason why the conservatives backed out of the coalition was they felt that they were now, so many months having passed since Papandreou's ouster, that they would have enough support to win the elections. So they caused the coalition government to fall, then they formed a conservative government, and they were planning to have elections, which they thought they would win. Meanwhile, Papandreou thought his side would win. And then about a month before the elections, the junta took over, using a plan which the king himself was planning to institute on the day of the elections, had Papandreou won, as he surely would have. And that's one reason why the king was so furious when the takeover occurred, because it was done by men who were not under his control, you see. Mm-hmm. Now the West, which has long opposed the junta because of its militaristic and autocratic methods, has been pressuring them ever since they've come in to be transitional. And the longer they've stayed, the less transitional they have been. And now it looks as though they're going to be permanent for a good many years unless they are forcefully thrown out. The West saw the king as their source of difficulty for the junta, and also the rightists who have refused to support the junta, to their surprise and annoyance. So they, I think, pressured the king into taking the step that he took a week ago, thinking that with the humiliation of the Cyprus situation, where Greece has A, had to remove Grivas, who was the hero, and B, had to remove all its illicit troops, and C, had to even pay the Turks money in order to keep from being invaded in a war that they would surely have lost since they're not getting American military aid. This was really a great humiliation for Greece, and the people know that. And the Cyprus issue is something that is very close to them. And it is, in fact, one of the things that caused the difficulty with the defense minister, which was why Papandreou had to resign. So they thought the feeling would be very high now against the junta, as indeed it probably was. But where they misjudged was they didn't realize the feeling was not correspondingly high for the king, mm-hmm. who is justifiably unpopular, and for Karamanlis, who of course was the ideal ruler of Greece for the West, because he kept things very calm and peaceful in the 10 years after the war, and he was in control during the period of economic prosperity and so on, which Greece rebuilded with American money, and it was a very successful administration.
But it is doubtful if a high-handed, semi-autocratic administration like that could work now. Now, Papandreou is said to have agreed to work with this new government, but I suspect he would have very little actual power in it. Indeed, I suspect that anyone would have had very little actual power in any government that Karmanlis headed, except Karmanlis himself. And I think that's why the people didn't rise up at all, and why the army remained loyal to the junta. So, if the king is gone for good, I think it might be a very good thing. Because his control of the army in the first place was what enabled a group of colonels to take over the government, even though he himself did not know about it. And there's always this potential of the king being able to suspend the constitution. It's written right in the constitution that if things reach a certain state, the king can suspend the constitution and the army can take control.
Oh.
And that's why they were able to do it so easily, because they announced over the radio, Konstantinos Vasilevs Tonelinon, Constantine, King of the Greeks, decrees the following. And everyone in Greece, I suppose, people had their suspicions, but no one knew whether it was the king or not. And there was good evidence that it might be the king. So that's how they were able to do it so easily. Until the elected civil government is in control of the armed forces, this sort of thing can happen any time. And as long as the king is in virtually complete control of the armed forces, this is a definite danger. Also, the royal family is a great expense, and they have, since Paul's death, I think, commanded very little love and respect, except from the conservatives.
Oh.
Queen Frederica is very unpopular. She's German and had strong conservative leanings in the Second World War period, and, even though the royal family, of course, eventually went with the British. She is hated for her Germanic background. And they have remained consistently foreign ever since they've been in Greece. They've never married anyone who was Greek.
Mm-hmm.
This, I suppose, to avoid the inevitable difficulties that would ensue if they picked out one family and married into it.
So they don't care whether he comes back or not? The people.
The junta cares.
The junta.
Because their recognition depends
yeah.
on it. But what they know is that being in such an important position and so important for NATO, they know that Britain and the United States cannot withhold recognition long. And so sooner or later, Britain and the United States will recognize the country. Because it's a real threat to the Mediterranean, obviously, if this country is not a full NATO member. And,
Leslie, who was that leader in Crete who fomented so much, according to our newscast? He was a stormy character there for Greece.
In Crete?
In Crete.
I don't know.
He's the one they said caused so much of the trouble. And one of the concessions that Greece made was to recall him.
No, he was in Cyprus. And that was General Krivas, who was the cause of the whole Cyprus crisis. What he did was shoot up a Turkish village.
I said Crete instead of Cyprus.
Yes, that's right. What he did literally was shoot up a Turkish village, which was virtually unarmed. He killed about 21 people. And when the Turks found out about this in an election year, they were just furious. They saw they had all the cards. They were, 10 miles from Cyprus. They had superior air power and superior military power because Greece hasn't been receiving American aid. You see, it doesn't really have that much fuel for its planes. They said, you pull out Rivas or we invade the island and take it for Turkey. And of course, there's been no better time for them to take it for Turkey than right now, because the junta is in no position to defend Greece. To give you some idea of how completely afraid the junta was, they removed Rivas. That day, he got off the plane in Athens and went to a villa, and he hasn't been heard from since. And this man was the hero of the Cypriot Greeks, Makarios's admittedly somewhat troublesome right-hand man. He was out just like that. And then the Turks saw they really had things good, so they just started pressing demand after demand, and the Greek government eventually gave them everything they wanted. And they weren't even able to save much face. Their only real
thing that they fought for, was to be able to do it gradually, removing the troops gradually so they could save face. And of course, the Athens newspapers were carrying headlines about a week before this Constantine thing, you know, Irene me axio prepia, peace with dignity. And everyone was just laughing because that was just exactly what the headline should not have said, because it was peace with humiliation.
Mm-hmm.
And the people were actually saying that it had been bought at a price in money. And indeed, they did have to pay some money, supposedly reparations for the village that was damaged.
Well, what did the United States man do?
They...
I mean, you know, the man who...
Vance and so on.
Yeah.
They persuaded the Turks not to invade if they could get the Greeks to yield to all their demands. And they also persuaded the Turks to soften their demands slightly to enable the junta to save some face. That is, they didn't have to pull the troops all out within, say, a week or something like that. Many of the troops have already left. This could be a very good thing, you know, if the United Nations does begin to really patrol Cyprus. And then if the Lord would just take Makarios to his side, this could really be a very good thing. It would lead the way to perhaps independence of Cyprus, which seems to me is the only solution, although not in the immediate future. But if they could get it under the control of the United Nations, rather than under a joint Cypriot-Turkish control. What has happened since the partition is the Turks have literally been barricaded in their part of the island, which is much smaller. And they've lived under a virtual state of siege from the Greeks.
No, I think it's on the right channel. Let me see if it's not.
Started out with that Bach, and I botched that up, and then played the Mozart, and that was okay.
Well, then after you played, go ahead and tell us, and what did she say? Just right away she'd take you?
Yeah, she said, okay, we got a place on Wednesday, and that'll just be for this term. She didn't say anything else, and then came back that night for a lesson, and then it was all.
Is she just full up all the time, Mary Carol? Did she just take up?
She's got a whole bunch of things that don't she has.
Now, young students, but she doesn't usually take young students your age.
Well, she's got a girl from Korea that's 13 or something, and then one that's 15 from St. Louis.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then all the college kids.
How old are you?
I'm 15 today.
Oh, really? First. Well, what was her comment in general, or did she make any about your playing?
She didn't say anything, just that I have weak fingers.
Weak fingers.
Yeah.
And in your first lesson, what did you just play for her, or did she start right away?
She started with the stuff right away.
Mozart is the first thing she did.
Uh-huh, yeah.
She must have liked the way you did the Mozart.
Yeah, I guess so.
Now, let me know, tell us what you mean by your technique lesson.
Oh, there's this other kid, and his name is Larry Berry. Anyway, I'll go in and play scales and stuff, and then they got a technique thing like Debussy or Chopin or something. You play that, and then you sight read, and that's all.
What does she say? I mean, does she...
Oh, there's this lady, and she observes all the lessons. I don't know what for.
But she's probably going to be a teacher. This is probably part of the teaching thing.
Too. Yeah, but she's there all the time. And
taking notes?
She doesn't take notes. She just watches.
She doesn't say anything that she's playing or anything. She just sits there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. She's
is she very, very... You said in your letter that she everything had to be just right.
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
Well,
other than write notes, what do you mean by that?
Oh, you gotta put your hands a certain way and all that, and hit the key right, and be a nice tone and all that. And,
uh-huh. And she requires how much practice?
Oh, she wants 4 hours, but I can't get 4 hours.
What if you do?
3. To get up in the morning for an hour and then after school.
But do you feel, do you realize her greatness, and does she ever play for you?
No.
She never plays for you?
I mean, she'll just play a passage and say, now, wasn't that beautiful? Yeah. But she never plays anything all the way through.
Uh-huh. Well, what did she say about the way you play?
Oh, sometimes she'll say, you know, well, that was good. And then if it's bad, she calls you baby. Well, let's try that over again, baby.
How do you know what she wants you to do this time?
Oh, she'll say it, you know. Everything's got to have arches in it.
Yeah.
You know.
That's the phrase, isn't it? That's the best.
Yeah.
She does talk a lot about the peak of the arch, too.
Yeah. Count the measures and divide by 3/4, and you've got the peak.
Count the measures and divide by 3/4, and you've got the peak.
Mm-hmm. If you moved up a little bit, you wouldn't have to come home.
And, so you have in your scales. What about your, where's the peak in your scales?
Oh, you have to do 4 octaves, and it's something like the second octave down. It's just a fee go down.
Do it the
play it fair. Oh, yeah.
I know you.
Oh, play one.
You can't do them together.
Yes, this makes sense. Very much sense. One hand.
You do it slowly, too. If you're for good enough, she gives you, increases your speed.
How long is your lesson?
About 1 hour, 15 minutes. She has to leave at 5:30, fix her husband's supper.
Isn't it unbelievable that you've got 1 hour, 15 minutes once a week, with, and then plus the hour of technique?
That's about, comes out to about 1.5 hours.
You mean the hour of technique is just once a week? And
yeah.
This is when you do the scales, and this
yeah.
At your regular lesson, you play your pieces.
Yeah,
so you
have another lesson
just yeah, with this other kid.
But you really have about 3 hours a week with her.
Yeah, except on the technique lesson, about half of it is with the other kid.
What do you and Larry Berry do together? One at each piano?
No, she just has him play, and I watch, and then I play, and he watches.
Probably so. She's so because she's so proud of him.
Well, she wants. She has everybody in classes.
Yes, this is good.
Oh.
And you don't play together, you just watch the other kids.
Mm-hmm. You hear what he does wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is good because why do it with each student when if you've got even 2 or 3, they can hear it's the same thing in technique.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to do that too.
Mm-hmm.
You can't arrange it?
Yes, and we do sometimes too. We'll do more of it. Well, this is a bright spot in Edwardsville, isn't it, Mary Carol?
Well, nobody even knows who she is.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
The townspeople, you mean?
Yeah, they don't accept the university. First people in the university had a hard time getting along. And they wouldn't. They don't let the university. They won't let them open their cafeteria on Sunday because it'll take the town's business away, and there aren't any good restaurants.
Well, are most of the young people you go to school with townspeople or university?
Yeah, no, they're mostly town.
Do any of the others go to school with Texas?
They don't even know who she is. They don't know who she is.
So just about 3/4 of your life is just kind of unknown to your peers. I think that would be fun.
Well, I think this is a wonderful goal that you've got a great person like that in your midst and don't know it. But maybe it protects her. And she lives in a house there in town.
Yeah, in the best section there is, but it's not a very big house. It's a nice house. It's little.
And are you used to your piano being in the basement?
Yeah, we got to get a new one, though.
Does she ever talk about when she's a kitchen?
She never says anything about what's happened to her. Oh, except... One time she's playing at a wedding and She just had played all the Chopin preludes, and some lady comes up and says, "Oh, can you play can you play Melancholy Baby?" You know, she said she's never so embarrassed in her life. That's the only thing she said.
Plan it away. Well, now, Mary Carol, play something for us. We know you haven't practiced in 3 weeks. This is horrible.
Okay. 3 weeks?
About 2 weeks.
How do you go for that long?
Go to Disney Games. Do you make the staccato sharp in scarlatti?
Not really, because there aren't any staccato written in there.
It's really just a detached one.
Yeah.
And you, is this the one that has the double trills in it?
Yeah, except she changed it so it's not very bad. She changes it all around, six trills in.
Well, this is one of the things she said that a teacher should be able to do. And it's almost intuitive in a way. You have to know the composer, but you still, if you have no imagination, she doesn't believe in addition. She believes the teacher ought to be good enough to know what the composer wanted to do anyway.
And fix it up within the ability of the student, maybe?
The fingering and stuff like that, but she doesn't believe in addition. And she says fingering is terrible.
Oh, yeah, she does.
Thank you.
arm movements that you've got in there, Mary Carolyn.
I'll get that up.
Well, we can tell what you're doing.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, we can
lovely.
Tell what you're doing. Beautiful. The tone, and I wish the piano we see were different, too. I mean, were in tune, but one thing. But we can certainly tell that there's a great deal been done. See, that we just need all afternoon.
I want to answer this. Can you yourself hear the reasons for the things that she's asking you to do, or are you just doing them because she's asking?
I can see why. She says doing that to make your own tone. So you shouldn't rely on the piano. If you do that, it makes the piano tone prettier.
Now, the distance of the interval, the higher your hand goes, the larger the interval, the higher the hand goes, because you've got to attack that top note at the interval. If it's a short interval, it doesn't go there. So you control the tone by the distance of your hand from the from the note you're going to come down on. This is revolutionary, I mean, you know.
If you want more out of it, you go higher. If the interval is big, say an eighth or a seventh, then you've got to get more into this in order to even make that seventh note sound. If you have a C here and go to a B, is that right? Then your hand comes down to the B stronger. If it's from C to E, you don't need much strength to make the E sound.
Mm-hmm. And you notice it works in this arm.
Have you had a thought of that?
She doesn't do that.
She doesn't even write down your lesson.
She doesn't.
She recites all these metronome speeds off and sitting there to write it down. I didn't have any paper the first time and I forgot them all.
Because she expects you to remember.
Yeah.
She would also expect you to use two or three different languages. You see, you use your mind constantly.
Oh, I can see why she doesn't take young ones.
Yeah.
Just so you can use your mind constantly. Now, let me ask you one thing before you play something else. What about the thing she wants to enter you in the spring?
Oh, that's this young artist, junk.
Just a little louder.
And then there's university sponsors that you play, but we went to one and the people on it were pretty horrible, so I guess it doesn't take much to get in, I don't think.
In other words, you're not too... impressed with it, but you are going to enter it.
Well, one girl broke her arm and she couldn't play, and the other guy was a trumpeter and he wasn't very good. But I guess this one's for a whole concert or something like that.
Well, we'll be listening.
It's not like the festival where you're actually graded.
You gotta play for people. You don't get graded or anything.
It's a college. It's just a college.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it isn't just for young students. It's for everybody. Is that right?
Well, yeah, it's for, gotta be in high school.
Oh, if you have to.
Junior high.
I see.
Can't be older than high school.
I see. Now, let me ask you one other thing. Now, what is this that your father and Mr. Brass are going to do?
Carnegie Hall thing. Well, they're just going to play April 23rd.
Is it their recital, or are they going to play on a recital?
No, it's theirs. They just booked the hall for them.
They booked the hall for April the 23rd.
Yeah. And they're going
to
play then.
Will you go to New York, Mary Carol?
No. You have to stay home.
Why, Mary Carol, you ought to go hear your daddy. Now, I tell you what, let's do. Let's play just a little bit of some of the others. We won't actually play all the way through because our time is sort of slipping away from us.
Right.
And would you play just, we'll sort of stop you. I want to hear a little of the Mozart. And this is very interesting, Alan and Vivian. This
that one's real short,
Max,
for that one.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I can.
Well, use the music. It's all right. It's Prokofiev's Vision Fugitive, and I want you to learn some of them.
Mary Carol, do you have to memorize these in 1 week?
No, she's about the second week. When she thinks you're ready, she doesn't just say memorize it. You just sort of memorize it.
Well, the idea is, I'm sure, Mary Carol, is that once you've learned the piece and you know the structure, you have memorized it. So
yeah.
You never say you're going to memorize it as such.
First, she takes... You do it just regular. When you have it memorized, it gives you 6 metronome speeds. And you have to do it one with right hand loud, left hand loud, then both equal. Then you have to do it all staccato, so it gets up. The more you know the piece, the more stuff she gives you that you want.
Yes. Well, when you have a new piece, the first thing you do is what?
Just go home and read it.
Just go home and read it. Mm-hmm. And then as you learn it more, she gives you more different ways to do it.
Yeah.
I see. That sounds interesting. Now, are you going to play this one?
These are detached, and in that it has to. I didn't do that right, but
peak in each of these, and that's got to be a peak.
Every phrase has its peak.
Yeah, and then you peak, you get it all together. And then right there, I didn't do that right either. That's supposed to be all down to, I think, there something, one big peak.
And you don't play in measures at all. You play in peaks, in phrases,
right.
And you count.
Yeah.
You count. This is the only way it makes sense.
Is peaks different from phrases?
Yes, because the peak could have several phrases. There might be a long, that the peaks would have little, I mean the phrases would have little peaks, but there would be, it was in the long phrase.
Yeah. Like phrases and pauses within a sentence.
Right, right.
Phrases.
Like if you slur something, she'll call you baby again. No, no, baby, you didn't write it that way.
I guess a better word rather than phrase would be slurs within the long phrase, you see, within the section. Now, you have, you use the Urtex.
Yeah, she uses
Verlet.
The Henley thing.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't like the Kalmus, but, I mean, that wasn't very much different, but she made me get the new one.
Yeah. Well, I like this, too, because that's unedited completely, that Henley.
She won't even use the trills they put in there. They have a little thing in the back.
This is what Lindell used all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we have to get it.
She got it in everything
yeah.
else. Too.
And you got it even in the Schubert.
Yeah.
Now, what else are you doing? You're doing some Debussy etudes.
Yeah, except that's pretty bad.
And then you're doing some Schubert impromptus.
No, they're the Moments musicals.
Oh, the Moment musicals. Yeah.
Of those,
and all of the Mozart sonata.
Yeah, except I just started the last movement.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think this is something that we can remember, especially this beautiful arm movement that she has it all right up in the round tone and into the key.
And it looks as though you're pressing the key at every point.
It took me about 2 weeks to get the hang of that.
Uh-huh.
And then she makes you do in staccato and accents, and you know, like 1-2-3-4, 1-2-3-4. I can't do that. Give me off beats.
Sure, that's very. And I know one thing that she doesn't believe in that a number of teachers do, and I do sometimes too. I change the rhythm. I have
well,
you practice in different rhythms.
That's what this really amounts to.
Yeah, uh-huh. But she uses the accent. Show us a little exercise with the accent.
But you just take the whole piece.
Yeah.
So on that, when you get it, I can't do the
in the piece itself.
And on the Debussy, I have 8 accents to do.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah.